I'm going to say something to you right now that is totally unplanned. When you get into the new church, you're going to find some things you like very much. You're going to find some things here and there you don't like. Contractors make mistakes. Architects make mistakes. People who serve on committees to build buildings make mistakes. The steering committee that has worked hardest at building this building has won from me the greatest respect and admiration I think I have ever felt for any group in my life. They have unselfishly given hundreds of hours to the building of our new church. If you see something you don't like, I beg you to speak about it judiciously, to talk to the right people. I don't want you to be snipers, carping critics, coming forth now after all this incredible effort has been expended in your behalf to say, why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do that? Or if you do it, my beloved friends, please do not do it in my presence. Because I can't promise you what the reaction would be. You owe an incalculable debt to these people. Please don't forget it. Now let's preach the sermon. Are you relaxed and ready for the sermon? Once upon a time, we all had to learn the famous proverb. We picked up a piece of pyrite on the vacation in Colorado, watched the gold flash in the sun, and thought we had found the ultimate treasure. We were still pointing and shouting when Mom came up, shook her head regretfully, explained that it was fool's gold we were looking at, and then told us for the first time the old adage we would hear many times during the rest of our lives. You have to remember, children, all that glitters is not gold. It would have been a useful lesson if we could have remembered it, especially if we had remembered to transfer the lesson from rocks to people. It would have prepared us to discover that the star athlete may flash on the field like a 4th of July sparkler, but be flimsy tin on a date and dull lead in the classroom. It would have prepared us to see through the expensively managed glitter of television personalities and movie stars and realize that they are flawed and ordinary people like ourselves. It would have made us less eager to watch the lifestyles of the rich and famous as if they were gold and our next door neighbor were dull and worthless. But we didn't remember always, and so we were taken in at times in high school and then in college and later in business and government by hype and hoopla, having forgotten what our mothers told us that all that glitters is not gold. It was bad enough to forget that, but there was something worse. We forgot the corollary truth, the backside of the proverb, all that is gold does not glitter. A great many things and people of immense value are quiet, ordinary, and unimpressive. They do not make entrances with drums and trumpet flourishes. They have no press agents. They are not charismatic. They cannot speak well in public. They may even seem a little dull, especially for a generation that has been fed on hyperbole since childhood. We watch people perform on TV and marvel at their grace and wit, forgetting that they have scripts and teleprompters, even when they are live, which is seldom enough, and that when they're taped, they can have all their mistakes corrected before we see them. This makes them seem to us incredibly clever and self-assured and golden. So that when the screen goes dark and we look around, life seems pretty plain, and our family and friends seem rather slow by comparison. Lawyers, doctors, ministers, teachers, not as glamorous in real life. The automobile mechanic, more like Don Knotts than Mr. Goodwrench. The bar, nothing like Cheers. The owner of it, nothing like Sam. But all that's gold does not necessarily glitter. And some good things and good people may go unrecognized because we forget that. Something happened recently in a college in Pennsylvania that shows perfectly what I mean. One day not long ago in the college chapel, 550 people jammed the pews to hear a stooped old black woman talk about being arrested 32 years ago for refusing to move to the back of a bus in Montgomery, Alabama. While they waited for her, full of anticipation, they got even more excited to see the unprecedented turnout all around them. The chapel only held 450, but there were 100 more lining the aisles, overflowing the balcony. So when Rosa Parks arrived and was escorted down the aisle, the audience burst into spontaneous, sustained applause. There was an introduction to whet the appetite even more, and then Mrs. Parks began to talk about her experiences and frustrations and hopes. But she didn't talk like an important public lecturer. She was slow and quiet. She was not dynamic. And so it wasn't long before people began to leave. By twos and threes, not rudely or noisily, but simply and unobtrusively walking out. And as you looked at their faces, you saw that it was not so much that they were disappointed as that they had become simply indifferent. Moments earlier, they had stood and cheered wildly at the thought that a personage was among them. A famous woman they had read about, heard about, and then the person had come and turned out to be ordinary looking and without any special charisma, a woman who did not glitter. And so they left. Those who heard her that day admit her performance was not thrilling in itself, but it was not the flaw in her presentation that led the kids to leave. It was the flaw in their expectation. We tend to have false expectations of every person who, by doing something, captures public attention, becomes a celebrity. Half her life ago, Rosa Parks got on a bus worn out by a day as a clerk in a store and weary of being abused all her life by racism. She was just too tired to do it when the white bus driver said, "Niggers, move back." So she sat where she was, up front. She said later it was not something she had planned. "I just wanted to go home to my family, to do what I needed to do for them. I didn't get on the bus intending to get arrested." But her courageous little moment of defiance, born of exhaustion or hopelessness or whatever, caught the eye of the whole country at just that moment when it could start something. Suddenly she was bigger than life, symbol for the whole civil rights movement, a frail, unlikely black woman who put that movement front and center on all our television screens. So 32 years later, the students in the Pennsylvania College expected her to be brilliant, articulate, charismatic. They would have thought it was great if she had come down the aisle escorted by impressive people, herself dressed in a gold lamé gown, her hair coiffed to perfection, her manner that of a person who knows she is important. That's what they would have expected of Barbara Walters, or Magic Johnson, or Ronald Reagan, or Sybil Shepherd. After all, a celebrity should look like a celebrity, act like one, sparkle. Of course, they knew this was a black woman. It was, after all, Black History Month at the college, which is why Rosa had been invited. But with that kind of buildup, they looked for a female Rambo, perhaps, who would clench her fists and shout a little and turn the place into a foot-stomping celebration. Or if not that, at least a sort of grandmotherly version of Martin Luther King, with some of that great cadenced rhetoric of his to rattle the windows of the chapel, the unforgettable magic of that rolling thunder, "I have a dream." Instead, they heard this little old woman talking very quietly, almost wearily. In fact, without much emotion, saying she believed in God, and she believed in her people, and she even believed in the promise of this nation that it would provide equal rights for all its citizens. She had no idea that any more than that was expected, but she couldn't have given more if she had known. Stirring oratory comes from people who thrill at being in the public eye, who have learned to move people to cheers and tears and laughter and determination, and know they can do it. But it was clear Rosa Parks was not one of those people. One had the feeling, watching, that all things considered, she'd probably have preferred to be somewhere else. Never having wanted to be famous, she carried her fame the way a very simple person wears a new showy garment. Uncomfortably, wishing with all her heart she could swap it for the old house coat and slippers back home. She didn't shine. She doesn't like giving speeches, and so she doesn't give them very well. She didn't glitter. And not being well schooled in the truth that's all that's gold does not glitter, the kids walked out. They missed something that happened later at a reception for her. When she sat down to greet people and sign autographs, and a young interracial couple came up to her with a little girl about 2. As the father leaned over to put his program on the table for Rosa to sign, the little girl was close enough for Parks to touch her. The old woman's face radiated love. She reached up, and with extraordinary gentleness, she touched the child's cheeks and stroked her hair. In that brief moment, with the child of a stranger, everything she had lived for and struggled for in her life and continues to hope for lit up the room. If the kids had stayed, they might have seen beyond their false hopes and disappointment to the miracle of quiet and common things. Or maybe they wouldn't. They float in a constant sea of images that are artificially enhanced and marvelously entertaining, and they have little tolerance for anything that does not shock them or distract them or amuse them. They have lost interest in the ordinary, which is too bad, because most of the work of the world is done by such people. Abraham lived in tents, here today, somewhere else tomorrow. Moses found God in the barren desert. Gideon got his call while he was threshing wheat. The first disciples were called from their fishing boats. And the wisest have known that God himself is found in ordinary things. Witness Brother Lawrence, cook in a monastery kitchen. In the noise and clatter of my kitchen, while several persons are at the same time calling for different things, I possess God in as great tranquility as if I were on my knees at the Blessed Sacrament. I do not mean to denigrate the need for leadership. In the way sunlight passes through a magnifying glass to set a dry leaf on fire, leaders focus the energies of a community. But it's the community, the people, who are the sunlight, the ultimate source of the energy. In the story I just told you, Rosa Parks was not really a leader, but a very ordinary ray of sunlight. She exemplifies the power of the ordinary at the right moment. Just a simple, stubborn refusal to be the victim one more time of a degraded and degrading social system, and so she became a symbol and ignited the conscience of the whole country. It was a small act. Anyone could have done it. Mrs. Parks knows that better than most of us. But as it happened, no one else did it. It was her act, her gift to all of us, black or white, young or old, a gift not glamorous, not wrapped in rich paper, not having an exquisitely sculptured media bow to set it off at first. That day in Pennsylvania, when she came to the college to speak, by an invitation that probably more than half puzzled her, the students overreacted. They acted as they had been trained to act by the promoters of public events. They gave a spontaneous ovation for reasons they weren't even sure of. Some of them not even sure why they were there. Whispering to one another, must be somebody really famous. And then when her talk was no more than just thoughtful and earthy and very, very unglittering, they were quickly bored. It is a parable for these times. And there is, as there usually is if you look for it, a word from Scripture to judge our ways by the ways of God. The doctrine of the cross, that whole story of the unexpected, that wild claim that the man executed as a criminal was in fact a king, all of that, the apostle says, is nonsense to those caught up in the judgments of this world. My own countrymen, the Hebrews, go around looking for miracles. The Greeks, in their worship of the mind, look for wisdom. And God, we keep telling them, is to be found in the spirit of a man nailed to a cross like an ordinary thief, a man in whose simple and unpublished life was the power of God and the wisdom of God. And then those remarkable words that could have been written expressly for the kids in Pennsylvania. God chose things of little strength and not much fame to overthrow the existing order. Some of us, surely, if we had been there that day in the chapel, would have remembered Governor Wallace, defiant and strong, blocking the door of the university against anyone with a black skin, and Bull Connors with his police dogs and tear gas and uniformed cops, and remembering that, we would have looked again at the little black woman whom we had invited, and the truth of the gospel would have filled us once more with surprise. God has chosen what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. He has chosen what is weak in the world to shame the strong. And we would have stayed and listened, and at the end we would have stood up to honor the living proof of what God has said. But there will be a time to do it again.